This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week's episode is brought to you again by the Friends of the Magic Word. Those are the ones who have financially pledged their support or given donations financially to keep this podcast going week after week and year after year, well into the 600s. In fact, this week we're, of course, presenting to you episode number 622. Again, thank you to the Friends of the Magic Word. And the latest person we would like to welcome is Uwe Sperlich from Munich, Germany. I hope I've got your name pronounced correctly. E-W-E. Uwe. Thank you very much. S-P-E-R-L-I-C-H. Mr. Sperlich, I appreciate you being a friend of the Magic Word. Thank you for your support. Thank you for listening. Thank you for coming back each week. And I appreciate you sharing this with your friends around the world, other places in Germany as well, to let them know about the podcast. And perhaps they too might want to give a financial donation. If you'd like to find out more about how you can help and why you're financial support is needed, if you'll go to themagicwordpodcast.com, there you can click on a tab that'll say become a friend of the Magic Word, and there's a 3-minute video you can watch, and it was recorded several years ago, but it's no less important today than it was when it was recorded. That was back before my hair got gray and I had a beard. So you might like watching an older version of your host for the podcast here. Well, listen, this week we're going to be having a really good conversation with a friend, longtime friend of mine, Mr. Michael Chout, who is one of the co-producers of Monday Night Magic in New York City. And now I qualified that by saying New York City because there is a Monday Night Magic also in London. And he tells a story in this week's episode about how that came about and some of the misunderstanding or not knowing that. Well, I'm not going to explain all that. He will. In addition to that, he will talk a little bit about some of the history of some of the other magic venues, some of the magicians who had performed during the 20th century in New York City. So it's an interesting conversation we have here this week, and I know that you will enjoy that. This week's episode is also supplemented with a video. If you go to youtube.com/Texas Magician, there you will find a video as well that you can see Michael and I talking via Skype on this conversation here this week. So from New York City, please welcome my guest this week, Mr. Michael Chout, here on The Magic Word. Today I have with me a friend all the way from New York City, someone who has been a longtime friend, someone I always enjoy getting a chance to visit with whenever I get out to the East Coast or occasionally whenever I get to some of the major conventions. I mean, major like FISM or something. It seems like he's always a very busy guy. So whenever I go to visit him, he's got his own personal assistant that's working in the other room, and he's got two phones on, and when we're in the car, he's still always talking to somebody. This guy is one of the hardest working men in show business, I tell you. He's absolutely amazing and someone who knows everybody that keeps things going, because he's the one who I think really does the magic behind the Monday Night Magic. There are several other producers, but he is one of them. Please welcome my good friend, Mr. Michael Chout from New York City. Hey there, Michael.
Hey, everybody. Hey, Scott.
Good to have you here, man. So you are in New York City, and New York really has always been kind of a hotbed of magic as far as where it used to be years ago that they had, New York Townhouse, wasn't it, or Magic Townhouse, I think?
Yep. I was a performer there, and so was Peter.
Peter Samuelson, yes, who was one of the other producers with you. Right. And Peter's been on one of the other episodes then as well. Tell me about kind of, I guess, that story about were you working with, was that?
Dick Brooks and Dorothy Dietrich.
Oh, okay. They were the ones who ran the townhouse. I was thinking of the other one with the guy who was the.
Talking about Imam?
Imam, thank you.
So Imam had been at the Magic Townhouse and then left and went to Mostly Magic. Hmm. And so, but the first magic scene for performing that I can remember in my lifetime was the Magic Townhouse. And that, I mean, so Dick and Dorothy now have the Houdini Museum in Scranton. And they come into New York every now and then, and they're like proud grandparents. fans. Because, you know, Peter was one of the first there with them, and then I was, and they really, if it wasn't for them, I don't know that Monday Night Magic would be alive today. I mean, I don't know what they were thinking when I was 19 years old. They let me perform at Soundhouse.
On stage or close up, or did they do a little bit of both?
Well, it was a mixture, actually.
Okay.
It was formal close up at a half moon table, similar to what you would experience at the Parlor in the Magic Castle.
Okay.
Believe it or not, I think the Parlor only seats 26, if I'm correct, and it's 20 something. And the Townhouse would seat about 30. And the way they did it is that a half moon table, the performer was on the straight side of the table. And it was probably 8 foot or 10 foot. So they had 4 or 6 people seated at the table. And then they had 8 or 9 people behind them on stools, regular bar stools. And then they had, 10 or 20 on higher stools behind them.
Wow.
All in the amphitheater way. And then they would probably let people stand behind that. And, on a sold out night, you could probably have 30 people there. You'd have to ask Dick and Dorothy, but they would be able to give you more detail. We actually did a Zoom with Hank Feinberg from Florida.
Florida, sure.
We did a Zoom recanting the magic of New York, and it really turned out to be a love fest for Dick and Dorothy. And there were so many people that were there that got their start at the Magic Townhouse. It was pretty remarkable. Eric DeCamps and Mayor Yetted and Peter Kagazian started there. And the list goes on and on and on. So
I know Hank Feinberg, but I didn't know he was involved with the Magic Townhouse.
He was not. He does these Sunday night themed Zoom shows for their local SAM club, I believe.
Oh, I see.
So during last year, 2020, we were invited for a Zoom session with his local group, and a lot of the old timers tuned in, and it was really a lot of fun. And we all talked about the old days, and Dick and Dorothy talked about what it took to keep a place. My recollection was that they were at 61st and 3rd Avenue. That's where they were, 61st and 3rd. Now imagine the real estate and what it cost. And they had a townhouse.
And it was literally a townhouse. It wasn't just the name of the place.
It literally was. You walked up the stairs. The first floor was the magic shop. And that was the overflow floor for the upstairs. The second floor was the main magic townhouse where I performed most of the time. Uh-huh. I did perform on the lower floor once on a sold out night. And I believe the top floor, I believe that's where they lived.
So they resided there as well as running the whole place, the magic shop. And
so I was never allowed in the residence. So,
wow. I did not know actually the town. I just thought it was kind of like, townhouse cookie or crackers or something, just a name.
But it was a thing. I think Jack London brought me there. Do you know that name, Jack London?
The writer?
No.
No.
Jack London was a New York mentalist who had a really big following. He was very much of a character. He had a heart attack, and his doctor told him no. Cigars and no booze, after I saw him, he was smoking a cigar, and I said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Didn't your doctor tell you no cigars and no booze?" And he said, "Yeah, that's no fun." And he goes, "I'm gonna get my revenge on my wife, and I'm gonna die first." And he did.
How old was he at the time?
60s,
70s.
I have no idea. Okay. I was 20.
Okay.
And when you're 20, you have no, when I was 20, 60, Hello?
Yeah.
6 feet 10.
Yeah, you look at somebody like us, we're like over the hill.
Exactly. So.
Well, that's interesting. So, again, they had the townhouse then, and that property has skyrocketed. I guess the neighborhood is just...
They ended up closing because the landlord tripled the rent.
Wow.
The rent went from $10,000 a month to $30,000 a month. And they said, bye-bye.
Yeah. So there was nothing that was grandfathered. I thought that was something in New York that they did where they...
It allowed you... You were allowed to do that, but only... You had a lease, and... As long as you were in the period of the lease, they couldn't raise the rent. But when the lease was up, they could do whatever they wanted.
Oh, I see. So, yeah, if you had like a 100-year lease or something, or five, whatever the lease period was.
Well, I was just talking yesterday with a friend, one of my favorite. Did I ever take you to Doha when you were in New York?
No.
Oh, you missed out, man. Doha is a. This is a funny story. I was performing at an event, and they said, "Oh, we're all going out now. Would you like to come join us for dinner?" And I said, "Where are you going?" And they said, "Doha." And I said, "What's that?" And they said, "It's Korean barbecue." Now, you're from Texas, so you're going to laugh. I don't like barbecue. I like barbecues, but I don't like barbecue sauce.
So, yeah, a little spicy for your stomach. I know you're – yeah, I know.
Exactly.
We've eaten – broken bread many times.
Good friend. There you go.
Yeah.
So I said, "All right, I can't eat barbecue."
Yeah.
And they go, "Just come." My friends said, "Just come." And I went, and it was a big table with a round cooking area in the center. And the barbecue part was they gave you meat that was marinated, and you would put it on the barbecue and make it, and everyone would eat it.
Uh-huh.
And then you, instead of bread, because probably, I don't know about Todd Robbins' line, alert. If you're like me, and I know I am, you know, bread is my friend.
Yeah.
So instead of bread, they gave you these big sheets of lettuce, and it was remarkable. So that you would wrap the meat, the cooked meat,
in the lettuce.
And eat it. Huh. And it was so good. And anyone that I brought there loved it. And by the way, the most unique thing, this is so funny, the most unique thing about Doha is that it was in the same place that Mostly Magic was.
Oh,
and okay. When Mostly Magic closed at 55 Carmon Street, Doha moved in.
Wow.
So I would tell people, so we would go there, and it would be a Magic Who's Who night, because I'd say, well, there was the stage, and there was the bar, and this is, you know, where it was when, because they had two different setups for it. In the early days, it was an amphitheater, and then they ripped it all out and they made it into a restaurant sort of dinner theater. Mm-hmm. And but anyway, it was so good. And owned by Quentin Tarantino. Now you would think.
No way.
Yep. And you would think that he'd had deep pockets, and they, at the end of their 10 or 15 year lease or whatever it was, the landlord raised the rent and it closed.
Just like that also. Huh.
It's like,
yep, it doesn't matter how deep your pockets are. I mean, if it's not really viable, I mean, at some point he's going to have to cut his losses, you know, just
if
business.
Just business. Yep.
So what's there now?
No idea.
Okay. You haven't been back there since it closed.
I have not been back since.
So you're talking about that was Mostly Magic where Imam was. Is that right?
Imam, yeah.
Okay. And that was going simultaneous with the Magic Townhouse.
Yeah. So the scoop is, by the way, there's no better flattery than people who copy you.
Hmm.
And the scoop was that Imam left. There are actually a couple of people that left the Magic Townhouse and started their own thing. Marvin Baccalaura started, and don't ask me to spell that because I have no idea. But he was a guy who worked in the Garment Center and as I was a kid, he was a good mentalist. And in fact, he influenced me, my style a little bit. And he opened up a place called Chamber Magic.
Okay.
You know, you'd think.
That's got a ring to it.
Yeah. Steve Cohen, hello, Mr. Subliminal.
Yeah.
I was like, you're calling your show Chamber Magic? But, you know, maybe he was too young and never heard of it.
Wow.
And by then, all of the brochures were printed. So Chamber Magic first, then Imam, because Imam, by the way, was an engineer by day and a provocateur at night. And so he got the space and then built it by hand.
Wow.
Have you been to Danny Archer's place, Smoke and Mirrors?
I've only seen the videos of it, but I've not personally visited.
Well, I've never been there either. But from my understanding, it was similar. You know, Danny, I know, got in there with a hammer and a nail and built it
right
inch by inch. And Imam did the same with his place. Hmm. And then at some point later on, they ripped it all out. And they thought they could figure out a way to get more people in and use it for eating purposes as well. So they had a full kitchen and all that.
That's what I seem to recall, was they did have a kitchen and everything and doing close-up. As I recall, too, Eric DeCamps had worked there. Was that right? And they had a stage as well as close-up.
Yep.
Yeah.
You're talking about at
Mostly Imam. Magic.
Mostly Magic. No.
Just close-up.
Originally, they had a table with an amphitheater.
Yeah.
And I say an amphitheater, it was 270 degrees.
Okay.
With bleachers sort of seating, and it was all risers up and one table. And that was close-up at the table.
Gotcha.
And then the next rendition was, for all intents and purposes, you know, stage slash parlor, because it was stage, but it was more, you know, you couldn't, you're on an 8x8 space or 10x10 space, so there was no big illusions.
No wings or anything, obviously.
No, nothing. You walked up the stairs, out the door from the basement, which was the green room. We all got ready downstairs in the basement, and you're on the stage right there. You know, to the best of my recollection, it was a long time ago. And I mean, I saw Williamson perform there, and they had all great performers. I, at the time was a semi-pro, and I had Thursday nights.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm interested in kind of knowing the history of some of the magic in New York. So I was kind of asking about the detail on that. And again, the Dick and Dorothy were at the Magic Townhouse. That was, and then they went to Scranton from there, or was there someplace before or after? What was the?
Correct. I believe from there they went to Scranton.
Okay.
And quite frankly, they were off my radar for many, many years until I think Monday Night Magic. So, you know, they were probably still at the townhouse till about 83 or so. But you'd have to check the dates.
Yeah.
And then we started Monday Night Magic in 97. And Mostly Magic lasted till 93, I think, or 94.
Okay. I have talked with Dick and Dorothy for an episode a while back when they were putting out their, or actually still working on raising money for their Houdiniopoly board game and everything. And so we did talk a little bit about this, but it's been a few years back, and so some of that has escaped me. I'm going to have to go back and listen to my own episode there sometime, too.
How many episodes has it been, Scott?
Well over 600. We're getting close to about 650 here shortly.
Amazing.
I plan on going to 5 more conventions between now and the end of the year, so everyone will be hearing some convention updates or convention reports and updates from different places where I'm going to be attending. But surprisingly, again, I would think, whereas Chicago, for an example, has always had a lot of magic clubs, New York Lounge, or Pickle Barrel, and it goes on and on. Currently, of course, Chicago Magic Lounge, as well as some magicians who are working different restaurants. Are there a lot of guys who are working and gals working in restaurants in New York now, or some, to your knowledge, or many, or any?
You know, it's an interesting question. There used to be some. I mean, Bobby Baxter, who performed at the Magic Townhouse and also performed at Mostly Magic, and also performed at Monday Night Magic, always, you know, worked in restaurants. I do not know of any. You know, the last restaurant where the guys were working was Ninja. And Ninja closed.
Hmm.
Did you know about Ninja?
No.
So Ninja, the theme was that everyone was a Japanese ninja.
You mean the servers?
Yes, the server, the employees.
Okay.
And you dressed, everyone dressed looking like a Japanese ninja.
Wow.
And then they for whatever reason, the owner liked Magic. I never worked there, and I had never been. It was one of those places I was going to go, but it was a kitschy place, and they would get a lot of celebrities. In fact, one of our guys, I believe, either Ben Nimzer or Mike Patrick worked for, Will Smith's son's birthday party.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so celebrities would come to New York and throw their special events at Ninja.
Yeah.
And the guys would work there, and they did very well. And they had a good complement, about 10 performers. And then, of course, you know, there's Speakeasy Magic, which is not per se what you're talking about, but it's sort of the next level. Speakeasy Magic, which was created by Todd Robbins and I believe Danny Doyle, is in a bar, and the bar was basically dead, you know, at different times in the evening. And what they did was they put in 10 tables, or say 11 tables. Each table seats 11 people. There are 10 guests seated at each table. Again, I've never been. This is only hearsay. 10 guests sit at each table, and one of those spots at each table is open for a magician. And the magician stroll from table to table to table. And so throughout the evening, you might see 5 magicians. There's no food served. It's only alcohol. And, you know, it runs from like 8 to 10 p.m.
And so people can kind of come and go and have a drink.
No.
Oh, you're there for the 2 hours.
Yeah, people came. Maybe it was an hour and a half. I don't know the specifics because I haven't been, but everyone sort of loved it. Todd had a very eclectic, unique lineup of performers and all different styles. And then they would have on top of the magic at the table, I believe there were 2 things that happened on a parlor platform as well.
I remember Todd had something else I thought that ran for a while that I tried to get in whenever I was out visiting you last time. Last time I was out there was to see the Darren Brown show when he was on Broadway. And I was there for a few nights, and you said, hey, I'll try to get you in Todd's show. But it was like...
That was Speakeasy Magic.
That was Speakeasy Magic. Okay. Okay. Yeah, it was slammed, like packed. No way.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, it's a remarkable formula. And the crazy thing is, so... they were spending on magic over $1 million a year.
Holy cow.
At that venue. Think about it. They were hiring 10 performers a night.
7 nights a week?
No. It was only 4 nights. So it was Thursday, Friday, and either one on Saturday, one on Sunday, or 2 on Saturday.
And the tickets were sold online, as I recall, too.
Yeah.
That was a way that you can get in. And it was just the one seating, or did they have a couple of seatings?
One seating.
Okay.
I think on Saturday, maybe they had 2 on Saturday. Maybe they had an 8 and an 11 or something like that.
So, yeah, that was successful. Do you think that's something that could be replicated in other larger cities? I'm talking about L.A., Chicago, Houston, Denver.
You know what? It could, but the secret to that, first of all, they were, you know, charging over $100 a ticket, I think, to get in.
Yeah.
It has to be a city that has, you know, an affluent crowd, and you have to have good magicians. So, and then I think the key was that the producers of the show were the same producers who produced a hit off-Broadway show called Sleep No More. And the smartest thing they did was collect every name and email address of everyone that came to sleep. So their marketing machine was remarkable.
So they already had a built-in audience, basically, and said, hey, if you like that, you'll like this, and come and bring your friends, and they kept coming back. And so so how long did that run? 2 years?
Yeah, and it will be starting up again soon.
Okay, that sounds great. Again, that's called what?
Speakeasy Magic.
Speakeasy Magic, that was it. Again, I know Todd Robbins has been involved with you from the beginning as far as the Monday Night Magic, and I really want to talk about the genesis of that. Because the idea or the name, I guess, started in England. And how did that evolve? Or
I'll tell you the story.
Okay.
So Monday Night Magic started the first time in a restaurant on the Upper West Side.
Mm-hmm.
And I was invited. I had some friends who were opening up a restaurant called Holy Cow. It was a steak place, and it was way ahead of its time because it was before steak places. Probably you have a lot of steak places in Texas, but it wasn't a thing in New York. And before steak restaurants became a thing, they opened, this was 1996.
Okay.
And they opened up this place called Holy Cow, and they invited me to be the magic element of the restaurant. And they wanted strolling magicians in the restaurant, and they wanted to produce a show one night a week. And I have the big meeting with the general partner to discuss what night are we going to do this magic show. And they had this beautiful event space below the restaurant. So I wanted Saturday, but I knew he was definitely not going to give me Saturday. Their idea was, by the way, that they would get promoters to promote. In New York, promoting is a thing. I don't know if it is in Houston, but the people that promote dance clubs and bar scenes, and people would go and they would spend money on the alcohol and they would dance, etc. And they would pay the promoters to bring in the audience. And they still do this today in New York in places like, you know, some of the big fancy dinner and dancing places in the city.
Hmm.
Promoters still exist. But promoters have been around since I was, since I was 20. I mean, it's remarkable that business has stayed as
they're just able to bring in clients or customers basically to your place.
Right. And they would hand out postcards, $5 off with this postcard. People would show up. So instead of paying $20 to get in, you'd pay $15.
Yeah.
But the promoter would probably get 10 of that 15. And they promoters made a lot of money. So their idea was to have a promoter promote the event space downstairs as a club space.
Okay.
And wanted one night a week to do magic. And so I wanted Saturday. I knew he wasn't giving me Saturday. So I thought I'd ask for Saturday, and I'd settle on Thursday. Because I don't know how it is in Houston, but in New York, Thursday was the party night. That's when everyone wanted to go out.
Pretty much, yeah.
So I go, what about Saturday? He goes, no way. And then I said, how about Friday? He goes, you're dreaming. And then he said, look, you want the room for free or not? I go, well, of course it's got to be free.
Yeah.
You know, the idea was that we would keep the gate and they would pick up the dinner, the food and
the drinks. Right.
And I said, yeah, I want the room for free. And he said, you can have it on Monday or Wednesday. Because he's thinking those are the slowest two nights in a restaurant.
Sure.
You know, a week in a week for a restaurant. And I said, Monday. Yeah, Broadway's closed on Monday. We should do it on Monday. And then he said, and the gentleman's name was Steve Ornstein. And Steve Ornstein was a, by the way, holy cow, all of that was a joke based on Phil Rizzuto's famous line, holy cow, it's a home run. And it was a sports.
He was the announcer for the Yankees, right?
Correct. And the theme of holy cow was sports. So the partners were Brian Leach from the Rangers, Pat Kelly from the Yankees, Howard Cross from the Giants. The list went on and on.
Okay.
So I got to meet all these guys, which was fun.
Yeah.
And I have great stories of performing for Brian Leach and Pat Kelly and Howard Cross. Howard Cross, I called him Howie, and he said, my name is Howard. And he had a hand that could go literally around my neck. Like, sorry, Mr. Howard.
Yeah. So you said Monday.
So I said, by the way, so Steve Ornstein had a TV show on Fox called Sports Extra. And his persona on TV was Oren Stevens, which is funny. Steve Ornstein, Oren Stevens.
That's funny.
And by the way, he was in the movie Downhill Racer with Robert Redford.
Robert Redford, too. Remember that?
But in any case, so Steve Ornstein said, yeah, Monday, you could call it Monday Night Magic. And I went, that's a great name. And we did. And we ran the show for 4 months. And we were the only thing in the restaurant that actually made money because we had no costs. And so we didn't lose a thing. And by the way, there's still people like Mayor Yedid, who you know, still will talk about the that we never paid the performers a fee, which is not true. We did towards the, you know, once we got established. But in the beginning, they got free dinner, and they all loved the dinner because, you know, you could have a filet mignon for dinner, whatever you wanted.
Yeah.
So it was great. And it was a really fun thing. And that's where the tradition of, by the way, going to dinner after the show started.
Oh.
I mean, it finished.
Yeah.
Which we've kept now 26 years later.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's always a good way to wind down. It's one of my favorite parts of being there is to go out with everybody afterwards and just kind of unwind and tell stories until the wee hours.
Yeah. So anyway, and by the way, any of you who are listening, it's not a closed thing. If you come to Monday Night Magic and you want to join us for dinner, just ask anyone. Don't be afraid. Don't be shy. Don't be polite.
Yeah, you don't have to just be working there.
Yeah. Just say, where's the dinner? I want to come.
Yeah.
That's the spirit of the dinner. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we called it Monday Night Magic. Back to your original question. So now the restaurant closes after 4 months, unfortunately, and we're dark. Mayor Yedid goes to London 3 months later, comes back, calls me and says, Michael, I just got back from London. I said, yeah. And he said, I performed at Monday Night Magic. And I said, you're kidding. They stole our name. And he said, Michael, they've been running for 3.5 years. I said, you're kidding. I stole their name. So he said, you know, they run their show in a theater because the theater's dark on Monday and you should do the same thing.
Makes perfect sense.
You'll never get cut out of the venue because it's always an open night and
right.
The venues stay around forever. And I said the same thing. Yeah, that makes sense. But I could never afford a theater. And anyway, make a long story short, too late. About a year later, I got it in my little head that I wanted to start it up again. And I did it as a one night thing at a very magical theater called the Sullivan Street Playhouse. And people really liked what we did. Now, the key, of course, is the name. So before we started, I knew that people knew that I knew that we had stolen the name.
Okay.
So I couldn't just Monday Night Magic. It would come back and haunt me. When I didn't know, fine. And I didn't know.
Yeah.
I didn't know, you know. But when I did know, and there were people that knew that I knew, so I wrote a letter to John Lenihan, who I actually spoke to today via email. Actually, it was funny. I said, Mayor, how did you find out about Monday Night Magic? And he said he read an article about it in Magic Magazine. So I called Stan Allen and I said, you wrote an article on Monday Night Magic in London. He said, yes, I did. I said, can you put me in touch with the owners? And he said, sure. And he gave me the email address. Now, here's a little trivia for you. Sad, but So John Lenihan was one of the founders. Do you know who the other founder of Monday Night Magic was?
I do not.
Anthony Owen.
Oh, wow. Okay. Hmm. That's sad.
It is sad. He was such a great guy, and he's
very smart fella.
Yeah, really smart and always there for you. John and I just spoke about him yesterday. We've been on calls working on something right now, so we've been talking the last 2 days.
I had him on an episode just about a month before he passed.
Wow.
I mean, sounded fine to me. I mean, you know.
John Lenihan, somebody, Anthony Owen, by the way. Yeah, so I don't want people to think that John Lenihan is gone.
Yeah.
Anthony was such a great guy. Anthony, this is a true story. Anthony calls and contacts me and says, I'm coming to New York and I want to perform Monday Night Magic. Great, we'd love to have you. And he said, can I stay at your house? And I said, sure. Now, Scott, you've been to my house and you know the mess of my house. so
I think the Hoarders is going to be coming to your place and having an episode there. Intervention. Yes.
I've been told by my brother that it has to be cleaned out before I die because he's going to torch it. So anyway.
It'll be like a tire fire that'll burn for weeks.
So Anthony Owen is going to come to the house. So I said to him, you can sleep on the couch. I'll sleep in the bedroom. No problem. Having forgotten that I double booked, and I told a former girlfriend of mine who was going to be visiting New York that she could visit and stay at my apartment. Mm-hmm. And if she had stayed, I would have slept in the bedroom and she would have slept on the couch. No problem. But now that Anthony's supposed to be on the couch, where's she going to sleep? So she says, I'm not sleeping in the living room with a man I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm taking the bedroom. So now I tell Anthony, who's, by the way, 20, so when we started Monday Night Magic, I was in probably 38.
What year was that again?
97.
Okay.
I said to Anthony, who was 21 at the time,
yeah,
I said, I got a little bit of bad news for you. She's sleeping in the bedroom, I'm sleeping on the couch, and you're on the floor. And I gave him a sleeping bag, and Anthony, the creator of Derren Brown and all of those great mats, this is why he never invited me anywhere now. I made him sleep on the floor in my apartment.
Wow.
In a sleep.
And so he performed. But he just was over in New York for another thing, apparently, and said, well, I'm here, can I work? Yeah.
He did, and he worked great. But back to the deal. So I call Stan Allen, and I get the information for John Lenahan and Anthony Owen, who I didn't know either of them, and I write them an email. Because in those days, there was no Skype. There was no internet. This is 1997. It seems like there would be, but there wasn't. And calling England was very expensive. It was something you didn't do. But you had email. So I wrote an email to Lenahan and I explained the whole story. I didn't want them to think I was a thief.
Yeah.
So I sent them this long email with the whole story of how it all happened and that it was an honest mistake. And I, you know, wanted to beg forgiveness. And Lenahan writes back, no problem. Completely fine. And then I write back saying, well, we want to start up the show again. And he said, no problem. He says, Anthony and I love the idea of a New York franchise. This is honest to God email going back and forth. And I'm like, uh-oh. What you talking about, Willis?
Franchise. Yeah, what you talking about, Willis?
And I wrote back, what's the franchise fee? And I waited and I waited and I waited. And the email finally came in. And the franchise fee for Monday Night Magic was $1 per show to be paid in beer when they came to New York.
Cool. So have you been over to London in the meantime to see their venue?
I have never been to the venue. I've been to London.
Right.
I think the only time I was in London since Monday Night Magic existed was for the centenary, and
that was a fantastic convention.
It was great, but I don't think that Monday Night Magic had sort of stopped, and it was only going on twice a year, and it wasn't going on, so we didn't go to the venue.
And so it's dead now, is that correct?
No, he still does it like twice a year.
Oh, just twice a year, not every week. Okay.
No, he still does it like twice a year, and I think he's doing something coming up soon again.
They should change the name to Solstice Night Magic, and so they do it on the winter solstice and the summer solstice, and they're good.
No kidding, because he only does it in
Wow, that's amazing. I remember the Sullivan Street Theater, because the cool thing about that is that's where the Fantastics had played for the longest run ever.
Off-Broadway show ever, 43 years.
Yeah.
And we are now the longest-running off-Broadway magic show running 25 years.
And you have had how many different venues?
9.
Well, I was just going to say 4. 9. I didn't know you had that many. Okay. Because you were there at Sullivan for probably, what, 10 years?
No. For 4.
Oh, wow.
The building got closed. We 4 or 5. And we were in one theater twice. So 9 is really only 8 physical spaces, but we were, you know, if you count,
move
we left, Heck yeah.
Yeah. And was it bounced all around town? And as a result, did you notice any slippage as far as attendance goes?
Yeah, the place for the show is the Village.
That's the best place.
Yeah, we had the best turnout. You know, we find that people, when they come to see Magic, they want to go out and have dinner and, you know, and carouse around the Village. And you know, the Village is such a fun, happening place. And then they come to see the show. And then maybe afterwards they go out for drinks with their friends.
Well, the Village is really cool. And it seems like, isn't it near the Blue Note? You're like about a block away from the Blue Note Jazz Cafe and other kinds of popular places.
And Cafe Wa is literally in the same building as us.
Uh-huh.
Another prestigious, long-standing place, Greenwich Village, and there are so many iconic places that still exist, and then there are so many that are gone. You know, CBGB's is gone.
See, well, CBGB's been gone for a long time. I remember Penn Jillette always talking about that place. It was kind of like where punk on the East Coast began.
It's hard to believe that Penn and Teller were fixtures in New York for many years. Mm-hmm. I mean, and by the way, they used to have a Friday night after their show, they would have movie night, and they would all meet at midnight, and they'd go to a movie on 42nd Street,
huh.
All of their friends. And then after the movie, they'd go and discuss it at Howard Johnson's, or maybe they met in Howard Johnson's first. But either way, it involved a meal and the movie and all that.
So it's kind of like what they do with Monday Night Magic, of going out afterwards to break some bread. Yeah. But that is, as Frank Sinatra says, New York City is a city that never sleeps. So there's always something open somewhere. It seems like I remember one time when I was there, and it was, I don't know, late at night, early in the morning, and somebody had said, hey, you want to go over to this bar? Tonight is, let me see if I got this straight, Midget Lesbian Black Vampire Night. Or something like that. It's like, what?
A regular night here in New York.
Just another regular night. And it's like, he said, yeah, this is the night of the month. They do this like once a month. It's like, wow. I probably should have done that. It's kind of like going to the Jim Rose Circus. I did that once too, you know. So I probably missed my opportunity of seeing something a little bit different on the dark side of the city.
I have seen stranger things.
You have seen Stranger. Well, you've been around a lot there in New York City. I remember, speaking of which, about Y2K years ago, and I was there prior to that, and you had something booked, and we were talking about I hadn't booked anything yet for New Year's, and you were saying, well, that's the night in which, you know, if everything goes to crap the next day and all the computers crash, you should make sure that you get a pretty good price for it, because there are a lot of parties, and make sure that you don't undercut yourself and someone calls later that would have paid more. So, you know, start high. So I did, and I didn't get, so about the third time whenever I started coming down, I finally got something, but I didn't get as much as you. But New York City has people perhaps with a little bit larger bank accounts.
Yeah, it's funny, and we played that game 2 years in a row, because is Y2K, was it the year 2000 that New Year's Eve went from 99 to 2000, or is it from the year that we went from 2000 to 2001? So it was a 2-year game.
Oh, that's cool. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, then too. So the place right now in Greenwich Village where you are performing, what is the other show that's there the other nights of the week, or does that change?
It changes all the time.
Oh, it does. So there's not like a long running like you have with the Fantastics.
So we've been at this theater now, I think it'll be 8 or 9 years, and which is sort of, you know, major time for us, given that we've been in 9 theaters
right.
Over 5 years. And our landlord is a remarkable guy. His name is Michael Skouros. And Michael is a musician and a creator of plays and musicals.
Mm-hmm.
So he uses the theater to feature his own shows that he writes and
produced
with his production partner. And then they fill in other shows in the interim, and it's the perfect place. And you know, so we are part of the contributors for it, and unless he throws us out in the next month.
But you've been there now for how long?
November of 12.
Okay. So about 9 years. Yeah. I remember also years ago when I would stay with you, and a couple times I went over and stayed at Simon Lovell's place, and Simon had a show he ran, and that's another thing. It seems like in the city you've got a lot of pocket theaters like they do in Chicago too.
He ran a show at the Soho Playhouse, which was a theater that we had been in.
Okay.
We left under contentious circumstances, and there's good old Simon making a deal with the contentious landlord to have his own show. So guess how many times I went to see that show?
Zero?
Zero.
Yeah, okay. You didn't want to support the landlord.
I didn't. Well, I didn't want to be in the building.
Well, as I recall, now the theater he was only seated like 15 people or something.
No, it actually sat more. And I lied, actually, because I'm remembering now. I went once because his opening act was Ted Greenberg, who was a very funny comedian. And I went once to see Ted's show, and then I saw Simon's show as well. Mm-hmm. But I had seen Simon perform, you know, 850 times.
Sure.
And it's the same show. But so it wasn't like I was being mean. But I went once. I lied. I went once.
Yeah, yeah. Well, speaking of some acts that you've had that you really enjoyed, and some perhaps were less than stellar over the years, without naming names, are there some acts that you can talk about that you didn't like?
Oh, there were, we never didn't like anyone.
Well, I don't mean as far as personally.
I'm kidding. No, there were people we didn't like personally as well.
Yeah. Well, there was me.
That's true.
So
you've been back?
I've been busy.
Yeah, I know.
So what have been some things that just didn't work?
For the record, I tease we like Scott.
Well, thank you. Thanks for clarifying that. For some people said, see, I told you.
I wanted to clarify. That's right.
We're close enough, you know, buddies.
I can't the date of when you were in, but it was a long time ago.
Yes, I remember it well. And that was, I'm going to say, shortly after 9/11, so it might have been 2002, maybe, or something.
Do you want me to check? I have the database.
No, that's all right. I don't remember. Maybe before that, might have been in the 90s. Still, have there been some folks in which it's kind of like, you know, you've got a certain qualification.
Well, I don't want to forget to talk about Monday Night Magic Live Online, because this has been, you know, the last, we've had... the last 33 weeks we've done, or 34 weeks, we've done some incredible work online with our new show, Monday Night Magic Live Online. And it's really sort of remarkable because we can have people perform from anywhere in the world now. And so it's sort of like the pick of the litter. And because we had so much built up goodwill, you know, there are people who had heard about our show. Now, oh, my God, I would love to do that. And I don't have to leave my house.
Yeah.
We did it online. Well, we can do it on StreamYard. And I was like, yeah. So, we had a couple of weeks ago, we had Cyril from Japan, Eric Chen from Beijing, and David Kwong from Los Angeles. I mean, it was an unbelievable show.
Wow.
And we have Michael Carbonero coming up in 2 weeks.
And so, you have David Corsaro a lot of times as an MC, and you got some other people.
Yeah. David Corsaro is our host. There's been rumors that Todd Robbins may host, although he's hosted private events for us, but he hasn't hosted our show yet, mm-hmm. only because some new projects going on. And we've had Ben Nemser host a couple times. And this coming Monday, we have TJ Tanna hosting. And I'd like to point out it's the soft 25th anniversary of the opening of Monday Night Magic.
And so because this broadcast will go out after that has already aired, what is the date so people who are listening will know?
We opened on June 23rd, 1997. So we've decided that June 21st of 2021 will be our soft anniversary show. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to do a big anniversary show in July, I think it's going to be July 19th now.
Of a Zoom show?
Yeah, well, virtual.
A virtual show. Or StreamYard, whatever. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a virtual show. Gotcha.
But Zoom is, is like a word like Xerox now.
It has kind of Kleenex and Xerox, exactly. It's kind of gotten into the vernacular that, like here I'm using Skype.
Listen, magic has that too. To do a Houdini is to disappear, you
That's
know?
True. That's true. That is something that, again, people can sign on just by going to MondayNightMagic.com?
Yeah, they can find out about it, sure, at MondayNightMagic.com. We are broadcasting on Stellar. You said the word Stellar, which made me think of Stellar. We're using the same network that other Helder used for The Present when he had 6,000 people watching. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, 6,000 people in one night. That's our new go-to number.
Yeah. That was amazing. Going back again to some of the shows that have been in New York that were limited run things, like Darren Brown was limited run, like Ricky Jay, like Derek Delgadio, and I think Dan White.
He'll be back again.
Yeah.
And also before that, Joseph Gabriel had a show.
I forgot about Joseph Gabriel.
Was on Broadway, and David Copperfield had a show, his Broadway show. And before that, Blackstone on Broadway.
Yes, and I spoke to Gay, who told me apparently they still have the unparalleled record of the longest run for a magic show on Broadway.
Oh, wait, hold on. I don't know that that's true, because Doug Henning and the magic show ran as well, and I don't know how long that ran for, but I don't think that was a short run either.
I thought that was about 9 months or so.
Gay would know.
Yeah. But she would. That's why I was going with just what she had said with that. Well, so going back over there to your online show and people being able to get tickets, then you mentioned also that Todd does some private things. Now, what kind of private shows do they do? Are they similar to this where you would?
We were contacted by someone who wanted to do a birthday party, and they wanted it. To be worldwide. They wanted people to be able to attend from all over the world.
Uh-huh.
So we did it on the StreamYard platform, and Todd hosted. And that was Todd, Eric Jones, and Ossie Wind.
So in that case, did the client ask for certain magicians, or just kind of give you the free will to choose who you wish?
She asked for Todd. She loved Todd. She had seen Todd back in the day.
Right.
And wanted Todd. And asked me for my input, and I suggested Ossie and Eric. And, you know, Ossie, obviously, and Eric both having fooled Penn and Teller on Fools, and Eric having had his great success on America's Got Talent. And, of course, he has one-man show at Liberty Magic. Did you get to Liberty Magic to see that show?
I have seen his show before, a time or two, but I haven't seen it at Liberty Magic.
And, yeah, that's a venue that you should put on your...
I think, isn't that in the New Jersey area, or where is that? It's New York?
No, I'll tell you the story about Liberty Magic in a second. But I just want to point out that I was performing at the Magic Townhouse, not last March, but the March before, with Eric. We usually go as a team. Jack knows we're friends. And my last night, I got to see Eric's show in the close-up room. In the close-up gallery.
At the Magic Castle, not the Magic Townhouse. You said Townhouse.
Sorry, the Magic Castle.
Yeah, big difference.
Wow. East Coast, West Coast.
Yeah, Magic something or other.
Yeah. Anyway, and do I correct you when you say a blunder? No.
Well, I don't blunder.
Oh, there you go. Anyway. Folks, can you tell we've known each other for quite... But anyway, I wanted to say about Eric's show.
Yeah.
There wasn't a moment that my jaw didn't drop.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a magician. Every moment, every effect was a wow effect. It was really one of the best magic shows I've ever seen at the Magic Castle, for sure. And if not, one of the best I've ever seen outside of the Magic Castle. Although I would say I've seen some really great ones outside the castle as well, but that was really one of my highlights. And let me tell you about your nice segue into Liberty Magic.
Yeah.
So we get a phone call from a guy by the name of Scott Schiller, not knowing who he is. And he says, I'm opening up a venue in Pittsburgh called Liberty Magic, and I've done my research, and I'd really like Eric Jones to open our venue. And this is, mind you, a year and a half before Black Lives Matter and things of that nature. So it wasn't a that sort of a thing. It's just that the Pittsburgh Cultural Trust, which is the producer of Liberty Magic, is really committed to diversity. Mm-hmm. They are actually our partners on Monday Night Magic, and there's an interesting story to tell about diversity and Monday Night Magic Live Online, which if you remember, you'll ask me, and I'll finish that story. I'll finish that this thought. But in any case, so we worked with Scott, and it turns out, by the way, that Scott worked for the guy that brought Wicked to Broadway, and he was the main producer.
Wow.
Scott worked for the guy that brought Jersey Boys to Broadway. Scott worked at the Kennedy Center. Hmm. He ran one of the largest performing arts centers in Florida and one of the largest performing arts centers in Colorado. And now his dream job is at the Pittsburgh Cultural Trust. They're the largest landowner in downtown Pittsburgh. They own 20 square blocks, where within those 20 square blocks, they have 30 venues. The venues range from 68 seats to 4,000. Hmm. And Scott's job is responsible for filling each one of those venues with Hamilton and other great shows that they bring in. I mean, it's amazing. And producing all of this great theater. And I'm very happy to say he's become my friend. And I'm a consultant now for Liberty Magic, which, according to Eric Jones and myself as well, because I got to perform there one night, is the finest place outside of the Magic Castle. It's not better or worse. It's at par with the Magic Castle.
Right, just different.
Different.
It seems so, like I heard him. Didn't he talk at Magic Live a while back or some?
He did.
Okay.
He did.
And as I recall, it was like something unlike the Castle that books for a week at a time, or the Magic Island when we were open used to book 2 weeks at a time. It seems like that was a month at a time or something.
They wanted to book it. Originally, it was 6 weeks, but now he's listening to me, and he's doing a month.
Okay.
Because 6 weeks is a long time for a performing professional, even though it's well paid and the compensation is great and all of the rest, and they pay for travel and all of the other things that they do. But it's, imagine the parlor at the Magic Castle. Instead of vertical, it's horizontal.
Right.
Because the parlor seats 70, but it's seven seats in 10 rows, approximately.
Yes. Yeah.
The Liberty Magic seats 68, but it's only four rows.
Hmm.
So it's horizontal.
Right.
So it's four rows, 20 seats in each row.
Okay.
And they're behind you, they have screens built into the wall, mm-hmm, that are dark. You don't need them, and if you need them, they light up. There's a GoPro on top, so if you want to do McDonald's Aces on the tabletop and have everyone be able to watch it, they can all watch and see it on the screens behind them.
Right.
And they have state-of-the-art sound system, et cetera, et cetera. And when you walk in, you feel like you're walking onto the Titanic when it was brand new. And probably not a good reference, but it has that feel, that old style. But you're walking into it new, but they wanted to create that feeling that you're walking into a timeless place where magical things are going to happen.
Right. Another thing is the one person who works basically does a one man show for like 90 minutes. So, I mean, you just can't come in and do an act for like 20 minutes or you got to do the whole thing.
75 to 90 minutes.
Yeah, you got to have an act.
And they'll help you. The performers that they're bringing in, they'll help curate material if need be.
Mm-hmm.
And the most remarkable part of the whole story is this was Scott's dream project.
Yeah.
Because when he was a kid, he was a magician. And there's so many of those, you know, people who grew up, so grown-ups that loved magic when they were kids, and they later on in life get to live out their dreams. Somebody told me that, well, I know for a fact that General Schwarzkopf was a magician. I heard Colin Powell loves magic. Stephen Sondheim did magic when he was a kid. He told me so personally. And there's so many of these, you know, famous people and not famous people that loved magic when they were kids. And we as magicians get to tap into that love.
Yeah.
You know, as we do for a living.
Before we wrap up over here then, too, can you finish that story you were talking about, diversity?
Yes. Important story. Thank you. So the Friday before Martin Luther King Day, which was in January, Scott Schiller, remember, he is our partner from the Pittsburgh Cultural Trust, calls and says, Michael, we have to have a black guy on the show on Monday. It's Martin Luther King Day. Mm-hmm. And it felt, first of all, the comment felt very tokenism, and it wasn't.
Yeah.
And if you knew Scott Schiller, you would know it wasn't.
It was not the intent. Yeah.
It was not the intent, but it was like a horror. It was horror for him. It wasn't intent. I'm anything but tokenism. You know, my mentor was Frank Brentz.
You love the guy.
Brentz. And, you know, one of the most brilliant magicians, you know, I knew in my lifetime, who toured the world as America's Black Magician, by the way.
Right.
I said, it's Friday at 8:00. We have a show on Monday. The show's set. And I go, no. And he said, we have to. I said, all right, let me call Peter and we'll figure it out. And Peter came up with this great idea that we would honor Frank Brentz and we'd have Chris Capehart come on to talk about Frank.
Oh.
And Chris agreed, and we did. And it was really nice and it was wonderful. And it came off really well. And then the next day, Scott calls and says, that was great. You know, next month is Black History Month. Now, we were not immune to Black History Month. My business partner and one of the founding producers of Monday Night Magic was Frank Brentz.
Right.
And Frank used to go, we should do a show for Black History Month. And we did. And one Monday a month, we would do an all black cast, or other than the host, as we could at Monday Night Magic. But remember, Monday Night Magic didn't have the budget to be flying people in. It was sort of like who was on the scene and who was in town, et cetera, et cetera. You know, we would get lucky if Puck was in town in February, because he used to come up to New York in February, every February, to do a whole host of shows, and he would do the show. And we would there were a host of others.
I know, Ice McDonald and others, yeah.
Well, we probably had, who's the guy from Baltimore, Virginia?
Randy Schein?
No. Randy did the show, too. But, I'm going to get in so much trouble. He has a very deep voice. He's the big kahuna at Tanner's Magic Camp. Oh, he carries the big stick, the walking stick.
It's not Chris Capehart. I don't know.
No, it's not. But Chris has done the show as well.
Yeah.
Anyway, all these great black performers, but we only did it one night, one Monday a month. And Schiller says, oh, no, we have to do the whole month. And I'm like, what you talking about, Willis? And now, you know me, and I'm not prejudiced. You know, thank God my parents brought me up the right way.
Yeah.
It wasn't a racist comment, but it was a complacent comment, meaning I didn't want to work hard for it.
Yeah.
I knew that I could easily find two artists, but, oh, and by the way, here was the funniest part. I was like, there are 5 weeks this year in February. You know, and I had to get 10 performers, not 8. And Eric Jones helped, and Chris Capehart helped, and we found new people that we never knew.
Yeah.
And Noah Sony and Lion Flood and others that we never knew. And it was
Hiawatha.
Hiawatha. Exactly right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
It was a great month of
African American performers. Yeah, it sounds great.
Hiawatha down, because we got to call Hiawatha. we had a great month. And then we're in the middle of Black History Month, and Scott goes, you know, next month is Women's History Month. And I said, what do you mean? What are you talking about? He said, it really is. It's a thing, Women's History Month. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
So now we had to go and produce, you know, all the, and had to. It was work, but it was great. You know, there was this one night where we were on our production call with Suzanne and Billy Kidd. Mm-hmm. And Peter said, I have to say that you women did not get any easy ride here. You guys really were as good, if not better, than anyone we've ever had on the show. Mm-hmm. And it was this remarkable moment to Peter and I that there's more magic than we know in our little wheelhouse. And by the way, you know, we've had 350 or 450 performers at Monday Night Magic over the last 25 years. And yet there's so many more out there.
Oh, sure.
That we don't know that are really good. And then there's all the young kids coming up today that we don't know about.
The whole generation. Right.
It is. And this, so there was this one moment where I was early, before all of this happened, where I was sort of arguing with Scott Schiller. And I was saying, you don't know what you're asking. And because I knew that all the work was going to fall on my shoulders, that I'd have to find the people and I'd have to clear them and they'd have to be good. And, you know, we have the Monday Night Magic brand to mm-hmm. care about. All the talent has to be really great. And the pressure, it's a lot of pressure. And he says to me, you don't get it. You were a privileged kid. And I go, wait a minute. I wasn't privileged. I, you know, my mother was divorced when I was three. I never remarried. She couldn't afford where we lived. So, you know, I had to get a job when I was 13. And I've worked hard since I was 13 years old. And everything I have because I earned. And I worked hard. And he goes, you're not getting it, Michael. I said, you were born white.
Yeah. And a man.
And a man. Right. Thank you. And when he took the baseball bat out of my head, I was like, wow. And it was an interesting wake up call for Peter and I and, the producers of the show to say, we're not racist, but we've been complacently racist. And it's not really the right word, but, you know, there's this silent complacency where you're not.
As Pink Floyd would say, comfortably numb.
Yeah. And we were just talking about this, Scott and I, because it's a great little moment for the magic world and a wake-up call. And this is sort of what Liberty Magic is all about, that they really search to find people from all different backgrounds
sure.
to perform at Liberty Magic, because there are a lot of different people that can create great magic. And they don't have to be old white guys, you know?
Good point. Good point. Before we wrap up also, Michael, of course, since you are not the only person who is a producer, you mentioned Frank Brentz earlier being one of the early producers who has since passed. Can you tell me just about some of the other people who are actually, I know you mentioned, of course, Todd Robbins and Peter Samuelson.
I'll give them to you in order. So originally, Peter Samuelson joined me. And then Peter had recommended Jamie Swiss, who you know, Jamie Ian Swiss. And then Jamie is the one who recommended Todd Robbins. And then I recommended Frank Brentz. So the original five producers were myself, Peter Samuelson, Jamie Swiss, Todd Robbins, and Frank Brentz.
And so that has remained constant throughout all of the years, except for Frank passing.
Except for Frank passing, yes.
Right.
Even with Jamie in California, he's still adds his touch to the show. And, you know, when Peter has been traveling, Peter's always sort of phoned it in. And Todd has been a constant
hands-on guy.
Yeah, and someone to lean on, you know, throughout the years.
Yeah, so you're pretty much a hands-on guy who is doing all the day-to-day stuff and making sure we get the butts in the seats basically each week then too, and yeah. Also performing there and working as MC a lot of times.
That's correct, And Todd has been my rock, and every time I say I can't take it anymore, I want to. He talks me off the cliff. So.
Yeah. Well, it must be kind of difficult also that you can't get away from the standpoint you are tied down every Monday. I mean, you got other guys you can kind of lean on, but you're really, I think, there all the time, more than anybody.
That's true, except for most recent years, I have a colleague, Will Randall, who has been amazing, and Will can actually run the show without me being on premises. And, you know, Will runs our box office. He's sort of our treasurer for the show, and he does a great job.
Great. Well, as we wrap up, and I appreciate the time that you've given us here and a lot of great stories and things as we talk about the history of not only Magic in New York, but, of course, Monday Night Magic. The name of my podcast is called The Magic Word, and I always like to close by asking what your philosophy of life, or what is your magic word, or not necessarily a word, it could be a phrase.
You know, I think the best philosophy is to do unto others. I've always tried to do the right thing. And, it's funny because I'm old enough to know that not everybody always does the right thing. And yet I'm still surprised when people do. But I think that if you live by the golden rule, you know, do unto others as you want others to do unto you.
Yeah.
It's a good way to live.
That's very well said. Good way to wrap it up. Michael, thank you very much for being here. Thanks for being my friend, buddy. And that,
thank you.
It's been great.
Thanks for the new T-shirt, Scott. Right here.
You bet. New York City. New York City for the Magic Word Podcast. That was Michael Chout. This is Scotty out.
Thank you, Michael, for being my guest this week. That was really an interesting conversation and a lot of fun catching up with you. Well, one thing, by the way, I would like to clear up, because I'm sure we'll be getting some emails or comments if we don't correct this, but I was doing just a little bit of research as to what was the longest running Magic show, and apparently the Blackstones had 104 performances at the Majestic Theater there in New York City on Broadway, and Doug Henning had a few more. He was at the Court Theater, and he had 1,902, yes, that's 1,902 performances, which is about 4.5 years. So from the standpoint of the number of shows that were presented, it appears that, again, Doug Henning, yes, was the undisputed winner, I guess, of the most Magic shows and the longest running Magic show. So I'm going to have to get back with Gay to find out exactly what she was talking about as far as the longest running Magic show on Broadway. Maybe it has something to do with the location on Broadway versus off Broadway by a block or two. I'm not sure. Anyhow, have to check that out. But those are the facts according to the internet, and internet is always right, right? Right. Well, listen, thank you very much again for tuning in this week. I encourage you, if you would please, if you have not subscribed to our pod letter, go to the magicwordpodcast.com, and there you'll find an opportunity where you can subscribe to our weekly pod letter, our newsletter. I call it a pod letter because it will let you know who's going to be coming up from week to week, and also some suggestions from the archives, as well as other cool information. And when we have contests, you'll be the first to know as well. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember the golden rule: to do unto others as you would have them do unto you. This is Scotty out.